Thanks, Ross. My name's Gary, I'm an addict. It's great to be here. And I did this just over a year ago, and we didn't have a microphone then. So things are getting better. And there's a few more people in here than were there last year. Must have heard I'm speaking. Well, I wish I was joking. God. You know, last time I did this, I'd just come back from New York. It seems to be that the last couple of years of my recovery, I've spent my birthdays working out in New York. My birthday's the 13th of September. And last year, I got back from New York and I did this chair, and it was kind of, I was jet-lagged as I was doing it. And I'm saying that for the record now, in case anybody heard the CD, because I couldn't bear to listen to it back, do you know what I mean? And I got asked to do it again this year, and I was getting back from New York on the Friday, which would have been the 15th, as it was my birthday on the 13th, and there was just no way I was willing to put myself through that again, you know. And so I just wanted to kind of get that out of the way and just kind of let my nerves settle down a little bit. I'm really pleased to be at this meeting. I'm really pleased to see how many people are in this meeting. I'm really pleased to see everybody sitting in the seats and listening, because this meeting means a real lot to me. And, you know, I've been clean 13 years, and I've come across a lot of people that, you know, I got clear. I don't have a problem what people choose to do for their individual recoveries. That's completely up to them. I'm not, you know, one of those people that sort of says, you know, you have to have NA time or any of that kind of stuff. But one thing I used to hear off a lot of people was, you know, I'm going to the other fellowship because I want to get a bit of stability and a bit of maturity. And, you know, and I look at this meeting and I see a stable meeting and a mature meeting. And it's refreshing to see that in NA, you know, not a meeting where people are getting up and down and having their own meeting outside while they're having a roll-up. Not a meeting where people are screaming and shouting. Not a meeting where, you know, the treasurer is disappearing with the money. Not a meeting with an half-full committee, you know. It's a great meeting. You know, it's not for nothing that this meeting is like it is tonight. It's not for nothing that there's all you people in here tonight. You know, and my sponsor came to England and he said to me, you know, he said, it seems a lot of people in the UK have a real inferiority complex about when they get convention speakers, having to get speakers from the US, like it's kind of better recovery in the US or something. He said, and part of the reason we have good speakers in the US is because we have speaker meetings. Most people that speak at conventions in the UK have never spoken for 40 minutes on a podium before. You know, and it's quite a daunting thing to do. And you know, and he kind of encouraged us to set one of these meetings up. And I spoke to a couple of close friends of mine, and we talked about doing it, and they got very keen about it and started ringing places up and trying to find an appropriate venue for it. And you know, and we were having no luck finding a venue. And then one Saturday afternoon, I was out kind of wandering around the shops, and I thought, I'm going to give a few hours over to this. And I wandered around central London, and I went to all these kind of different churches, knocking on the door. I went to St. James's Church. It's the one that's just off Piccadilly. And I went there, and I went to a whole bunch of different places, kind of seeing if we could find a venue. And then I tried this church here, St. Martin's of the Fields, and they couldn't find the slot that we needed. And as I came out of there, I saw an addict kind of banging his head against the wall outside, by the doorway around the side here. So I went over and I thought, oh, this must be, you know, it's kind of, I came over and it turned out that it, you know, it was a venue. And then, you know, we followed up on that, and then we got a meeting up and running, and this, you know, and it's been great. It's been great to sort of have people who are actively involved and care about the meeting enough to set it up like it is. You know, and I kind of commend all the people that have been actively involved in this meeting. You know, we regularly have a business meeting. We don't do our voting in the announcements. You know, it says in our group booklet that all the voting should be done in a separate business meeting because newcomers don't want to listen to us arguing out about the price of merchandise at conventions in the announcement time. It's not what's, you know, it's not of interest to them. Business meetings aren't anonymous, recovery meetings are. You know, we have a regular business meeting and a full committee, and it shows in the way this meeting is, you know, and I needed to kind of say that really because, you know, I know that in NA we're capable of doing this stuff. I know we're capable of doing this stuff, you know, and I'm proud to be an active member of this meeting. You know, I'm glad I'm not using. I'm so glad I'm not using. I was listening to Linda speaking, you know. One of the biggest myths I've come across in the time of being clean is that we use because we feel bad. You know, and in the time I've been clean, I've realised that it's, you know, you don't have to be feeling bad to use, you know, and I hear all kinds of, you know, sometimes you hear at the end of the meetings, people say, you know, who you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here, because gossip's damaging, gossip leads to relapse, relapse leads to death, and it's kind of like, if you're going to relapse over gossip, then you haven't got a program in place in the first place, you know, because people have gossiped about me in the time I've been clean. I've gossiped about other people in the time I've been clean. I try not to do it now, you know, because I had that thing that my sponsor talks about, you know, when you first come into NA, you've got two big problems. Your first problem's addiction, your second one's a hearing problem. You know, when they used to say, who you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here. I used to go to the coffee shop across the road and someone would say, who did the chair? I'd say, oh, he was there and he did the chair and da-da-da-da-da, do you know what I mean? And I find it's much simpler to try and respect that stuff, you know. The reason we have anonymity is because it's a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, not because gossip's damaging, you know. And it's great to be not using because that's what I come to NA to do. You know, I'm not having the best time at work at the moment. I've got some problems going on with a house I've bought. I'm having problems that people are keeping us awake at night. You know, this company are working next to us and been complaining about it and going to the council and going to solicitors. And, you know, NA ain't going to sort that out. NA's not going to sort that stuff out. Doesn't, you know, people say stick around, it gets better. That's not guaranteed. You know, the thing that gets better is my ability to deal with things without going and using. That's what gets better. You know, but stuff's going to go on. And stuff does go on. Do you know what I mean? This last year of my recovery, I've had more problems with personalities and politics and bullshit in NA than I've had in my entire recovery. You know, I couldn't be, you know, there's stuff I could go on and start telling you about. I don't think it's the appropriate time, you know. But people, you know, we have to kind of keep coming back here because this is the thing that ensures me and gives me the choice against whether I use or not. NA doesn't sort out all the problems in my life, but what it does is guarantee that I don't have to go and use over those problems. You know, people say, oh, you know, well, it's not about not using for me today, you know. Well, it's all about not using for me. Always has been and always will be, I hope. It's about not using. You know, in case anybody hasn't noticed, there's not that many people around with more than 10 years clean. You know, I was doing hospitals and institutions service last week. I was in City Roads. 80% of people sat in that meeting had had between 2 and 8 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous in London. You know, people with hearing problems. You know, one of them was sat there. He said to me, he said, Gary, I remember us being sat here 6 years ago, you doing the chair and me sitting here listening to you rattling. And here we are again. I said, yeah. I said, I remember last time I saw you, I said, we were at a meeting in South London. And you were telling me you don't do it the NA way, you do it your way. And I said to him, I'd love to see your basic text. I would really love a read of the content of that basic text, do you know what I mean? Because, you know, we have a text, and I read the text a lot, you know, and because I found a way to stop using. I didn't know how to not use. I didn't know how to just say no. I didn't know how to do that. You know, I didn't know what was wrong. It was hopeless, you know. I was, you know, I didn't know I had a progressive disease that was killing me. I had no idea, you know, because when I started using, it felt all right. I was having a bit of fun for a few years there. You know, I went to a few raves, drove about in a few hire cars, hung around with a few kind of nice young chicks, you know, made a bit of money, wore a few nice bits of clobber and... You know, but what happened was I had a progressive disease, and what happened was in the early 90s, you know, the drugs I was using kind of changed. And I used to think to myself, if I can get off these drugs and get back to using those other drugs, things will be all right. If I can just stop taking the heroin and get back to sort of smoking a weed and kind of doing a few E's at a weekend and having a few drinks with my mates, things will be all right. Because when I was smoking a weed and having a few drinks and taking the E's, my addiction hadn't progressed. It was at a stage where it hadn't progressed. But it started to progress and it started to get hungrier. I didn't know this stuff. I had no idea. I didn't even know I had a disease. When I came into Narcotics Anonymous and they said I had a disease, I didn't believe them. When they were saying it, I thought they were just kind of trying to ease their consciences or something. You know, and what happened was, you know, I went to all these... I started trying to stop because the disease was progressing and it was getting hungrier and I was throwing all these drugs at it and it wasn't satisfying it. And what happened was, you know, I started to try and get some help because I started to get a desire to stop using. And we say Narcotics Anonymous, the only quiet for membership is a desire to stop using. Well, you know, I had a desire to stop using for kind of over 2 years before I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I certainly had a desire to end the consequences, but I used every single day. So what that tells me is having a desire to stop using will not keep an addict of my type clean, because I had a desire to stop before I came here. And what happened was, you know, I had all these attempts to stop using and none of them worked. And so I started trying to stop and I was going to all these professional people and I was saying, you know, and I'd go to the doctor and he'd give me a script and I'd get another habit to add to the habits I already had. Or I'd go to the kind of psychiatrist and I'd say, I'm depressed, I can't go on like this anymore, I just can't live like this anymore. He said, just stop taking drugs. Like I could just stop taking drugs. And then I go to the drug counsellor and they'd say, you know, go to this place, they'll sort you out. Go to this concept house, you know. And we'd be scrubbing the floors every morning and we'd be doing the dishpan and people would be going around with white gloves on, checking how dirty things were and everyone was screaming at each other. And then we'd be digging the gardens, you know, and I'm withdrawing off methadone as I'm digging the garden. And I'm, you know, and I often say this, I remember digging the garden and thinking I didn't take heroin because I didn't know how to plant shrubs. And then we have playing table tennis and doing shiatsu and kind of, you know, and relaxation groups and they put flipping Enya on or whatever it was while we all sit around doing deep breathing, do you know what I mean? And kind of, and I walk out the door and use. You know, my mum didn't know what was wrong with me. My dad didn't know what was wrong with me. My brother didn't know what was wrong with me. My mates didn't know what was wrong with me. My girlfriends didn't know what was wrong with me. I used to think, you know, my attempts to stop using, you know, yeah, I'll get myself a straight girlfriend. That's what I'll do. I'll just get myself a nice straight girlfriend and that'll sort me out. And we'll just get into kind of doing regular things like regular people, do you know what I mean? And I remember kind of, you know, I had a raging habit and I started going out with this girl and I said, you know, Saturday night, I think we should stop in, you know, we'll get a bottle of wine and we'll get a video. Videos when I was using and you know and you know we'll have a civilized night in at my mum's house. You know we'll stop in together. So she said, "Oh, that sounds great." Yeah. So I spend the afternoon running around kind of to get some gear together. Do you know what I mean? And I have a little use up and then I kind of stash the gear downstairs and think I'll leave that down there until and then when she leaves tomorrow morning, I know that I'm kosher, I'm covered, and I'm going to have my civilized night in. So we sit down and we put the video in and we crack the wine open and I'm watching the film and I'm thinking, this film's shit. Is this supposed to be funny? This film's supposed to be funny. I'm like, you know, and it's dragging on its heels, this film, do you know what I mean? And I'm kind of sitting there and I'm thinking about this gear that I've got downstairs, do you know what I mean? So it's like, shit, why didn't I leave some tinfoil next to it? Oh, you dickhead. You're going to have to kind of get some tinfoil out of the kitchen now. And my mum and dad are sat in the living room and the kitchen's on the other side of the living room, so I'm going to have to do a kind of kamikaze mission across the living room to get the tinny out, do you know what I mean? And so I say... just going to pop downstairs, see how my mum is, yeah? Just going to have a word with my mum for 5 minutes, you know what I mean? So then I kind of creep downstairs and sort of across the back of the settee, and, you know, in our living room, it was like the royal family, but without the dialogue, do you know what I mean? And they're kind of sat in front of the TV there, kind of watching whatever they're watching. And I get through into the kitchen and I get the tinfoil out and I'm trying to kind of get this tinfoil off as quietly as I possibly can and it's making loads of noise. And then I try and fold it up and put it down the front of my boxer shorts to creep back across the back of the settee, and you can just hear me crinkling across the back of the living room, do you know what I mean? And I get through the back of the living room and I get into the other room and I think to myself, fucking hell, that was my... it might be another kind of couple of hours before I get down back down here, so I might as well kind of make sure this is a good one. So I chuck loads of it onto the foil. Big beetle, do you know what I mean? And I wipe my face and I kind of look like a chimney sweep and I've got oil on my teeth. And then I kind of go, creep back upstairs, walk into the living room and try and look straight. Do you know what I mean? And it comes on top. Do you know what I mean? It comes on top and I can't stop. And I don't know what's wrong. I've got no idea what's wrong and no one's telling me what's wrong. And I don't have a choice. And I don't wake up in the morning and kind of make myself some nice fresh fruit juice and some croissants and some papers and kind of put the morning TV on and decide whether I shouldn't I use today. It wasn't like that when I was using, you know, because this progressive disease, I would wake up and the obsession would be on me the second I opened my eyes. There wasn't any choosing about it. You know, I got clean. I was walking around a treatment center like a parrot going, I've got a choice today, I've got a choice today, I've got a choice today, having absolutely no idea what gives me the choice. Because I didn't have the power to choose before I came to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, so I had all these attempts to stop using and they weren't working. You know, I tell this story because I always tell it, because it don't matter what drugs you use. I remember waking up in a psychiatric unit and I'd OD'd and my mum had been going to, she'd got all the info from Families Anonymous, which really messed things up, do you know what I mean? Because it's like I was getting no money out of her. And... And she turned up with all this kind of, you know, she was going, it's like all this tough love stuff, but she turned up at the hospital and I was in the, you know, when you're in a psychiatric unit, you see people who really are mad, do you know what I mean? There are people in there who really were mad, you know. My mum came to see me and I was just lying there and I was kind of like, you know, the nurses were bringing me medication, I was getting me food, and I just thought, this is great, man. You know, the nurses were kind, I just want to rest. I just want a break. I don't want to step back out on the street, because I know when I step back out on the street, what's going to happen? I know before I even leave this place, what's going to happen to me? And, you know, and what happened was, I'm in the psychiatric unit, and I said to my mum, please, 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 let me come back to your house and we're going to beat this together. Me and you, mum, as a family, we'll do it together. And so she said, yeah, all right, come back home. I'll sign my gyros over to you. I just need a little bit of weed just to help me get my head down at night, just a little smoke, and I'll get on a script and I'll reduce the script. You know, we'll drop it 3 mils a day, whatever, and I'm going to get clean. Do you want to answer that? And I'll get clean, we'll do it together. So I go back to my mum's house and I get on my scripts and I'm every morning I wake up and I'm sick and I come downstairs and I look out the window and it's grey and it's chucking down in rain in Blackburn like it always does, and I kind of, my mum comes in and she sticks a load of bacon butties in front of me and I kind of tries feeding my addiction, you know. She's kind of, her solution to everything's feed it, do you know what I mean? So she's putting all this food in front of me and I'm feeling sick and I'm depressed. And, you know, and I'm sweaty and I can't get comfortable. And I'm thinking, you know, and I'm putting my dad's Frank Sinatra videos on to try and stop myself from thinking about using. And it's not working. And I'm thinking, you know, what is this all about? Life after drugs. Fantastic, this, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And I'm kind of like a recluse in my mum's house. And after about 4 days, I thought, I'm doing smashing. Doing fine here. Doing great, you know. I'm doing that well, I deserve a treat. I'm going to have a bag. I'm going to get myself a Friday bag. I just have a Friday bag once a week, stick to me detox. I didn't know, you know, I thought I'll carry on detox myself, get myself off the habit, but I'll just have that one bag on a Friday night as a reward for doing so well. That's my thinking, left unchecked, by the way. I'll go and buy heroin as a reward for not taking heroin, yeah? That's my thinking, left unchecked. That's why I kind of keep coming back, yeah? And what happened was, you know, I go and get a bag and I use this bag and I get back to my mum's. I just go up to my room, mum, skin a spliff up, put the telly on, crash out, wake up the next morning, no problem. What's the problem? Well, what happens by the time Monday comes around, I can't stop thinking about Friday. All I can think about is the coming Friday. Tuesday comes and I'm watching the clocks. Feel like time's been slowed down. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, when's Friday going to come? Wednesday comes and it's like I'm flipping, you know, Friday bag. When's it coming? Two more days to go. Do you know what I mean? Thursday comes, I'm not excited it's Friday the next day. I think, well, I'm going to have my Friday bag a day early this week. So I go and get my Friday bag on a Thursday. And I use my Friday bag on a Thursday, get back to my mum's house, go up to my room, skin a spliff up, put the portable TV on, crash out. And then I wake up the next morning in the bed, and I go, fucking hell, what day is it? It's Friday. Oh, I know what I do on a Friday. It's Friday, isn't it? I've got to have a Friday bag because it's a Friday. So I make my excuses. I go and use a bag, and then I come back up to my mum's house, and I go, what have I done? It's 2 days on 2 days on a bounce. I've just done two. I said I was only going to have it once a week. And now my kind of home detox is kind of completely gone, kind of tits up, do you know what I mean? And the methadone ain't covering me anymore, do you know what I mean? So I'm kind of really sick the next day and kind of my head's all over the place. And Sunday comes and EastEnders Omnibus is on and I just think, bollocks to it. Bollocks to it. I don't want life after drugs. Can't stand using but can't stand being stopped either. An horrible place to be with a progressive disease that's driving me to use, driving the obsession to use, progressing. And I've learned about this disease since I've been here. One of my best pals, he went back out just before his sixth birthday. Now, when I met him, we were in detox together. And, you know, and he was an heroin user, and he went back out just before his sixth birthday. You know, he was progressively going to less and doing less and less meetings, and he ended up relapsing. And he went back out for 2 years, and never once used his drug of choice. Never once used his drug of choice. And rock bottomed in exactly the same way 2 years later. So I'm really careful about the language that I use in Narcotics Anonymous. I don't talk about party drugs. I don't talk about soft drugs. I don't talk about hard drugs. I don't talk about class A's. I don't talk about class B's. Because my addiction doesn't give a shit what government, what classification they've given to a particular drug. My addiction doesn't give a shit. You know, and we need to be inclusive and not exclusive. You know, just because, you know, I didn't know that stuff when I first came here. I didn't know it was all about a progressive disease that's progressive during abstinence. I didn't know that. And, you know, I'll just read this to you. It's from this basic text, yeah? Recovery and relapse, page 79. The progression of recovery is a continuous uphill journey. Without effort, we start the downhill run again. The progression of the disease is an ongoing process, even during abstinence. You know, and there's another line where it says, we begin to treat our addiction by not using. You know, so I've started to understand that I've got a progressive disease and it's progressive during abstinence. So if the disease is getting stronger, why would I want to start doing less? You know, when I got clean, all everybody talked about was a bridge to normal living. Yeah, it's a bridge to normal living. We're all off to the bridge to normal living. You know, it's kind of, you know, yeah, he's been around a few years now. You know, he just comes once a month and all the rest of it. I'm a fully conceded addict, fully conceded to my innermost self that I've got the disease of addiction. I've got a progressive, incurable disease that I fully conceded to my innermost self I've got. That, you know, if you gave my Auntie Jean enough heroin, she'd get addicted to it. But that don't make her an addict. You know, so what I've learned is the only thing that treats the disease is a spiritual awakening that comes as a result of these steps. That's the only thing that treats it. It says incurable. That means there's no cure to it. Doesn't mean you can cure it by having a nice motor, a new jacket, a tasty looking girlfriend, a good job, a big house, fame, fortune, money, property, prestige. Doesn't cure addiction. You know, it's incurable. You know, so as time's gone on in recovery, you know, I mean, I didn't know this stuff when I first came around. My understanding's changed. It's developed as time's gone on. You know, it was difficult tonight because I could hardly hear the readings, you know, and I went into City Roads last week and one of the guys in there, he'd been in and out of NA for about the last 13 years, this guy, and he sort of said, you know, can we skip the readings tonight? I said, what? Can we skip them readings? It takes about 5 minutes out of the meeting. I said, them readings are about the most sense you're going to hear in here tonight. You know, because those readings are pretty profound in the stuff they talk about. You know, I remember being in a meeting with my, you know, like I say, I've got the hearing problem. I'm in a meeting, I'm 11 years clean, and somebody says, we've learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean. It don't say, we've learned from our group experience that once you've been around 5 years, you don't need to come as often. It don't say, we've learned from our group experience that those who come in a bad space stay clean. Those who keep coming here regularly stay clean. And I've had to come here regularly and I've had to get involved. Because people talk about service like it's optional. You know, if you look at that NA symbol, one of the foundations of our program is service. You know, that guy that was saying to me in City Roads that we'd been sat there 6 years ago with me carrying the message to him. I sort of said to him, I had 2.5 years this time. I said, oh yeah. I said, how many times did you go and do some hospitals and institutions stuff? None. Me and Paul, who was a good friend of mine, we went up to Wormwood Scrubs. We're in Wormwood Scrubs. There was a guy in there, came into the meeting, screaming and shouting at us. You NA, where have you lot been? We need a meeting in here. No one's been in here for 4 weeks. We're clocking for a meeting. People in here are using. Everyone on the landings are going nuts. Where have you lot been? And you know, and I thought, well, let him get it off his chest. Wait till he calms down a bit, and then I'll kind of, you know, and then I'll fire into him. So he kind of, he calms down a little bit, and I kind of pulled him to the side. I said, is this your first time in NA then? He went, no. I was in NA on the out. I said, oh, really? I said, did you get some clean time then? Oh, yeah. Got 2 years. Said, you know, and then he proceeded to tell me which area of London he was in and broke a celebrity's anonymity to me and then kind of, and I said, oh, really? I said, is that right? I said, so when you had your 2 years, I said, am I right in assuming you were doing hospitals and institutions service, weren't you? Oh, no, never did that. I said, but you're quick enough to start screaming and shouting when you don't get a meeting. Now you're on the other side of the fence, aren't you? He went, oh, never thought of it like that. I mean, that's why we do what we do. I'm going to City Roads on a Monday night because I ain't got anything else to do. You know, but there's nothing else in my life gives me the satisfaction that I get from doing that. You know, I had a guy today rang me up who's in his first 12 months going on and on about some relationship that's broke down. What do you think I should do about it? I said, ring the helpline and get some training in. I said, that's the best thing you can do about it. Get some training for the helpline. Get out of yourself. Stop thinking, you think about yourself too much. All you ever talk about is yourself. Self-obsession. Obsession with self. Obsession, one thought that overrides all others. Self. Me. You know, and that's the way it goes if it's left untreated. You know, because that's the root of my addiction. You know, and the process of doing the steps is a progression from being a selfish person to a selfless person. You know, and I need a progressive recovery to keep one step ahead of a progressive disease. I need to keep moving. I need to keep changing. I need to keep developing. You know, I don't hit the plateau where it's kind of like, you know, take my foot off the pedal and kind of, you know, because ultimately, you know, there's nothing gives me, I'm more excited and enthused about doing this now than I ever have been. I can say with my hand on my heart, I'm more excited and enthused about Narcotics Anonymous than I ever have been. You know, the more I keep coming back, the more sense it makes to me, the more I fall in love with it. You know, the more I see people recovering. You know, I walked in here tonight, there's a girl sat over there, was sat in City Roads last week when we were there. You know, maybe she heard something from somebody that went in there. You know, because that's what it's all about. I can sit here and kind of tell you all about my feelings. I can talk to you about my feelings all night long. I've got people that I've, you know, I can, you know, that stuff's valid. It's valid. But, you know, but like my pal said, who went back after 6 years, he said, the decision whether I use or not is not based in what I think, it's based in what I do. I can't think myself clean. I can't think myself better. You know, it's all about what I'm doing. So, you know, I end up in a situation where I rock bottomed, I end up in my knees, screaming out in desperation to a God that I don't even believe in, help me. I can't do this anymore. I can't go on another day in pain, agony. You know, the external circumstances of my using were, you know, waking up in the morning, sick, having to go out, regardless of the weather, wishing I was dead, you know, to steal packs of bacon, jars of coffee, bottles of alcohol, whatever I could get my hands on, you know. I remember being 7.5 stone in weight with a black eye and a scratty denim jacket, going out into the supermarket and wondering why the store detectives were following me. Yeah? And you know, but the external circumstances of, you know, going kind of ringing mobile phones and the public phone box eating me 20 pence and the mobile phone you've called's not responded, kind of, and trying to smash phone boxes up because I'm kind of, you know, my £8.30's just gone down to £8.10 and I'm already kind of nearly a couple of quid short, and, you know, standing around in the rain waiting on street corners, you know, kind of thinking if I walked up from this phone box to that lamppost and back 20 times, it might kill the next 3 minutes. And kind of, you know, cursing the dealer because he's late, and then when he turns up, smiling at him and laughing at his jokes, you know, and kind of all that kind of world that I was kind of, you know. And I tell you what, people say that, you know, like, oh man, I just need a day off recovery. I tell you what, when I was using, every day I felt like a day off. And at the end of my using, a day was a long, long, long time. From opening my eyes, wishing I wasn't alive, to closing my eyes that night, it was a long, long time. And, you know, and I was sick of it. But, you know, the external circumstances, whatever. Progressive disease took me to a place where I'm asking God for help. Within 24 hours of asking, because I'd never heard of NA, I'd never heard of 12 steps. You know, there wasn't posters up in my community drug team where we collected our methadone scripts saying, you know, drug problem, maybe we can help. You know, and you call a helpline and these guys come and take you to a meeting. There wasn't any of that. There was no NA. So for a real addict of my type, a fully conceded addict, I was truly powerless. You know, I was speaking to someone this week who works in a legal profession, and he was telling me there's 2,500 registered addicts in Derby. They haven't even got a meeting in Derby. You know, so I consider myself very privileged to have found this thing. I asked God for help. Within 24 hours, I'm in a 12-step treatment centre. They got the steps up on the wall. Never heard of steps. Within a week, I'm at my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. I asked him for help. He sent me to where the power is through a series of coincidences. Or as my, you know, my sponsor says, odd or God. You know, because sometimes things happen that are pretty odd, and you get steered in a particular direction, and you look back and you go, ah, now I know why I'm here. You know, so I asked God for help, and he sent me to NA. And I didn't, you know, and they might as well have been reading Mr. Men books when they were doing them readings. You know, but I heard, keep coming back, and I kept coming back, and I've kept coming back ever since. And I've been through the steps of this program. And I continue to work the steps of this program. And I sponsor people. And when I sponsor people and I take them through the steps of this program, each time I'm doing that deepens my understanding of it. You know, and they'll say, oh, thanks for giving us your time. And I go, no, thank you. You know, because I get a few hours respite from thinking about me. You know, and it kind of, you know, my understanding deepens. And I've had amazing experiences working this program. I would strongly advocate, you know, the program gets a lot of bad press. You know, I think, well, what else are you going to do? You know, it says in the readings, these are the principles that make our recovery possible. We which implies that, you know, without them it probably isn't possible. You know, so you know, I got into these steps, and I, you know, and I made a decision to hand my will and my life over to the care of God, my thinking and my actions over to the care of God, which meant I had to do the rest of them, and make an inventory, and I had to sort out my resentments because I was full of resentments, I was full of fear, I'd been harming people, I needed to have a look at my sex conduct. You know, and I did that, and I started to find that in all these resentments, it wasn't about what they'd done to me. I couldn't believe that. It was all about what they were doing to me. That I had a role in it, and that, you know, that there was parts of myself that were causing me to hold on to this stuff. And I shared it with another human being, and God. You know, and then I got into the defects of character, and thought I could address my defects of character by thinking about them. You know, and then years later, years of kind of constantly falling into my defects and shortcomings, I started to do a daily step 10. And in doing a daily step 10, I have to write things down. And when I write things down, it's much harder to be dishonest. Because, you know, when I think, I can rationalize. Rational lies. They're rational lies. And when I write, it's so much harder to do that. And I have to stay on top of this stuff. Because it says in the book, it talks about when resentment or other emotional upheaval occurs, failure to practice the program can result in relapse. You know, I have to watch that stuff. You know, I've been out and I've made amends. You know, make amend. Mend what has been broken. You know, it doesn't say we made direct apologies wherever possible. Because I spent my whole using apologising. I can apologise. I'm great at saying sorry. You know, and I had somebody from this fellowship, you know, somebody kind of had a pop at me in a meeting that used to be my home group. And this guy's been around roughly the same amount of time I have, comes up to me and says, you know, I need to make amends. I just want to say sorry. I said, what, is that your amend? I said, if that's your amend, I don't fucking want it. You can keep that. You can keep your sorry. You know, because if you want to, but if you're coming to me and you're saying you want to make amends, is it an amends you want to make? Because I'll tell you what you can do. Because that's what I had to do. I had to go and say, I regret what I did. How can I make it right? You know, and, you know, a lot of amends have been made just by virtue of the fact I've stayed clean. But there have been other amends that staying clean wasn't enough. You know, and, I love being a part of this thing. You know, I've talked about the steps. The other thing I should mention is we've got traditions as well. You know, we've got 12 traditions. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. Don't give people positions because you say it's going to be good for them. Give people positions because it'll be good for your group. Because, you know, it's the group that matters. You know, I've seen it. You know, a group I used to be involved in, a girl rang me up desperate, cracked out her mind on a Thursday afternoon, crying down the phone, I'm desperate, take me to a meeting. I took her to a meeting. At the end of the night, they give her a tea commitment. And I objected to it. Oh, it'll keep her coming back. Well, guess what? She came back the week after. I've never seen her since. Whether that's because of that commitment, I don't know. But I've seen commitments when people take them on too early, stop people coming back. You know, it says in the group booklet, you shouldn't give people commitments early on because they need all the energy they've got just to stay clean. So, you know, first 90 days, I tell people, wash up and move chairs. You know, it's service, but you don't have to commit yourself to anything. You know, so, you know, and I've learned that you know, our leaders are but trusted servants. People have to lead. NA needs leaders, but there's a difference between a leader and a governor. Governors create policies, leaders implement policies. It's all right to initiate things, to say, yeah, we want to make this a good meeting, without people going, oh, Mr. NA's off. Do you know what I mean? Oh, don't take it all so seriously. We're only dealing with saving people's lives. Do you know what I mean? So, I'm a very grateful member of this. You know, like I say, not everything in my life's hunky-dory, but I ain't using. I wake up in a clean bed, I put on some clean clothes, I put some stuff on, might put a bit of shower gel on, smell a bit nice, eat some breakfast with my wife, read them papers, take it nice and easy, have a choice. you know, because I didn't have the ability to choose, because the ability to choose comes from the power that's greater than me, and the power that's greater than me is this fellowship coupled with this program that God provides for an addict like me to use. Because in and of myself, I'm just as powerless today as the day I walked in. Knowledge and power are not the same thing. Having knowledge about my addiction does not equate to having power against it. I can know all about this thing, but if I'm not coming here regularly and doing what's necessary, this thing will have me. You know, so I don't know, I've probably done my last 5 minutes, yeah? I'll wrap it up and just say, you know, very recently, one of my closest friends who I got clean with, you know, he picked up just before his 12th birthday. You know, we're a very young fellowship in London. You know, because I've got 10 years, I'm not out of the woods. Do you know what I mean? I know, like I say, I'm just better able to handle things without having to go and use, you know, a day at a time. It's good to be here, and thanks for asking me to do it. Thank you.